Wow, that was good. Look at my love. Hey, Gracie.
Hey,
hello.
Hey.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too, my friend.
It is so nice to see. I'm sitting on my stool, get myself situated on my stool. Thank you, Harry, for the transition. So, hi.
Hello.
And hey, Tamika Petway. Hey, Terrence Riggins. It's so nice
hey,
to see
Babs.
You all. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
So when I saw the press release for New Works, New Voices, I was like, I've got to find out how I can get in touch with them so I can have them come on. These are my favorite people because, you know, I know y'all from Collective Consciousness Theater and Elm Shakespeare. So it is so nice to see y'all. So tell me about New Works, New Voices. And congratulations, Gracie. I know you're heading up you got a new gig. You're heading up a new thing. So that's C.
Yes. I just got, I'm working at Southern teaching two classes this semester, which I'm very psyched about, teaching Theater 100. And it's just surreal to just be in that room teaching the same room that I was in and being surrounded by, more Black folks than I ever saw in the theater department, which makes me very, very excited. And I'm also work as a standardized patient for Quinnipiac. I pretend to be a patient for upcoming doctors and what have you. And when I tell you that work is unbelievably rewarding, just as a Black woman having to be in and out of hospitals and what have you and dealing with that world and trying to let them know what they might be walking into when they walk into a room and they see a person like
Wow, that's pretty groundbreaking.
It's
groundbreaking.
Awesome. I love it. And I'm working with these awesome people doing the show at Westport.
I think the best
thing is that we haven't seen each other's pieces. So I can't wait. I can't wait until Thursday so I can see everything. And Jenny's just amazing.
I follow all on Instagram and Facebook. I definitely follow Gracie. So I saw this and I was blown away. One, because it's the Westport Country Playhouse, because Westport, I just wasn't thinking that they were woke like that, but they are. So this is New Voice.
Jenny woke them up.
Yes. When I saw that she went over there. I was thinking to myself, they don't know what is coming for them now. They're about to get something for them in Westport when I saw her take the job over there. So this is coming up January 21st. This is Thursday. New Works, New Voices. Four monologues on the themes of Layla F. Is it Sayad?
Sayad.
Sayad, her book, Me and White Supremacy. And she did a talk or something the other day. Did she not?
Yes. She did.
This book is getting good reviews and all of that. But so you all are going to do four monologues in response to her book and to the work of Dr. King. So how did y'all get in a room together? How did this come about? Because this is fascinating. This is an evening of original work written in response to Layla Assad's Me and White Supremacy at this world premiere. It includes Gracie Brown, Ta-Nehisi Davis, Tamika Petway, and Terrence Riggins. And you will continue Dr. King's legacy through four new monologues recorded on stage at the Westport Country Playhouse. And it's a free virtual event. And I can't wait because I'm not going to miss it. I've already registered. So how did this come about? What was the thinking around this?
Anyone want to take it?
Jenny sent me a text, said, hey, T, what's up?
What you doing? And you get that text, and you're like, okay, what you want me to be doing?
she gave me the rundown, and, I love to collaborate. I'm in flow mode. If someone reaches out and invites me to collaborate and it's not hurting me, and I'm not misrepresenting myself or anybody else, and I don't have anything else to do, then I generally say yes, regardless whether there's money involved or not. That's just my approach to my life and to my craft. So, yeah, and I actually had been, you know, working on this piece before she invited me. And the piece, well, it's a larger piece, but I'm taking an excerpt from a larger piece. And I chose that excerpt in response to, you know, the event and the themes of the event. And the themes existed before Layla Saad wrote her book. And before Dr. King, you know what I'm saying, came up, you know, and did his thing. You know, they were responding to forces that already existed. So I believe that I know I had, but I'm sure that, you know, my fellow artists were also responding to those same forces before Jenny invited them.
So when you were invited, did you all have to come up with your own pieces, or did she have pieces for you, or did you have to just, you had to like create Tamika, Gracie? Like, did y'all create pieces? Talk about how that, like, how do you do that? When you get this call from Jenny and she says, this is what I'm thinking. Do you like, well, I might have something in my bag of tricks, or I could write something, or she was like, well, no, I got something for you. Like, how does that go down?
I can definitely say when Jenny called me at first, she was just like, oh, hey, there's a project. And she mentioned, you know, Layla Saad and MLK Celebration with Westport. I'm like, oh yeah, absolutely, I'll participate. She's like, but it has to be an original piece of work. And I know Gracie shares the same, but we haven't written before. I'll just speak for myself. I haven't written before. And so I'm like, yes. And so I said yes, because I'm like, you know what, Tamika, stretch yourself. You know, you don't know. And at the same time, as a Black woman, as a mom of a Black son, a Black daughter, oh, I have plenty of experiences that I can write about. So I just had to literally like narrow down my experiences and kind of loosely base my piece on what, you know, what has happened to me, my children, and then kind of tie that into the theme, which that part wasn't difficult. Mm-hmm. It was more so, I think the difficult part for me was getting past imposter syndrome. You know, I remember when I finished and he was like, Tamika, you're a writer now. And I'm like, I am. And my piece sits very well with me. I'm proud of it.
You felt like you weren't a writer? Like, I'm just trying to understand the imposter.
I'm a performer. So I'm like, okay, what monologue am I doing? She's like, no, you're going to write this. So it was a wonderful process. And I'm definitely empowered and inspired to definitely continue writing. So.
Welcome, Mr. Davis. So nice to have you.
It goes away, though.
Let me say hi to Mr. Davis. It's Tanisi.
Yes, Tanisi. Hi, everybody.
Good morning. Welcome. Good morning. To my show. I don't know you, but I know the other cast of characters, but I don't know you, so welcome. And we're just having a conversation about when Jenny called folks, did you have a piece of body of work ready? And I think Gracie was going to tell us how she, what did she, I'm sure Gracie had a body of work ready. No, maybe.
So that's funny, because most people would absolutely say that. And when I tell you me and Tamika live in that boat, that same imposter boat, that I was like, give me my monologue to do. What do you mean I need to write something? And writing has always been, it makes me anxious and has always been just to me. But I realized that in teaching my first class last semester, the first assignment that I had for them was to write a monologue about themselves, tell me something about themselves. So if I challenge these students to do that, I have to challenge myself too. And I would pretty much do anything for Jenny. And I thought it was a good opportunity. And I love these people that I'm working with. I just met Tanisi and I love Tanisi, you know? So I'm excited to, it was really nerve-wracking coming up with a monologue, but the monologue that I came up with is very, very personal. And it is literally a snapshot of my life that happened, something very real that happened. And so I also feel very proud that that's the first piece that I've actually written. I've had this one woman show running through my head for I don't know how many years, but I think because of this whole like pause in writing that I didn't feel like I was a writer, that I could actually do it. It's just been ideas running around in my head, but I feel like through the process of writing this and, you know, going back and forth with Jenny with the piece, I feel like I kind of have a focus and a direction as to where this show, which I haven't had that in a while. So I'm excited as to what else I'm going to write to contribute to this. This is definitely an excerpt of a bigger piece that I'm working on now.
Okay. So, all right, Tanisi, so when you got the call from Jenny Nelson, did you have a piece already, or did you have to come with your bag too?
When I got the call, I had a couple pieces ready. But for me, the timing of the call, there was so much happening within this system that we live in, that I wasn't sure if I wanted to write something new or if I wanted to go back to something that I had already written. And so I went back to a play that I had co-wrote called Timeline. And I was reading these pieces from it, and this play, Timeline, it gives a voice. We hear a voice from an African-American from each different point in our history, starting from before slavery, the Middle Passage, post-slavery, the Black Power movement, and so on and so forth. So we hear a voice speak from each one of these different eras. And for my Jim Crow era, my post-slavery era, there's a monologue called The Paper Boy. And it just spoke to me so loudly. It's one of those things where, you know, you write something, not with hopes. Well, for me, I write to release. So, you know, some people, you know, they're like writers. I think I can write, but I wouldn't consider myself necessarily a writer because I need to.
All y'all are sitting here talking about y'all are not writers.
Well, because, you know, a writer, for me, a writer is somebody who they're writing every single day.
Okay. Yes.
You know what I mean? And I wouldn't say that. I write off of feeling. If there's something that's really bothering me or I can't get my mind off of, that's when I escape the paper to get it out.
Okay. You know, so it's therapeutic.
Much so. And so this monologue called The Paper Boy was based on a true story. So my father's 82. And up until he was about 16 years old, every year, he was born in Brooklyn, raised in Waterbury, Connecticut, but all his family is from Georgia. So it's Georgia and South Carolina. So every year he would go down to Georgia to go visit his grandfather up until he was 16. And that same year, his grandfather, my great grandfather, was murdered by the Klan. And they were murdered because one of his relatives had stolen an ice cream bar out of an all-white ice cream shop. And he had told me this story, and it always stuck with me. And I wrote this monologue based upon that story that he told me. And it was just so relevant to what's happening right now that I just felt like I had to do it again. And it had been 10 years since I had done anything with that monologue. 10 years.
So, you know, when we talk about white supremacy, I don't know if there's any happiness stories in white supremacy. So how did you all take care of yourselves, or what came up for you as you were exploring your interaction of white supremacy? Because we all got our white supremacy stories, more than one. I dare say we got like thousands of stories of microaggressions, slights, out and out racism. What did you draw from, and how did you safeguard yourselves from dredging up some of these wounding things?
You know, I just want to say real quick that white supremacy doesn't exist. It's an illusion, and we are reacting to the illusion. We are reacting to the lie that it does exist. White supremacy, white is not supreme, period. Universally. It's a lie that we're responding to, and we're deluded. The world is deluded on both sides of the coin. It doesn't exist. It's a lie. White is not supreme.
I agree with you, but I think the thinking is, I think you're absolutely right, because there are more people of color on the planet than there are not. But I think when they say white supremacists, I think that the folks that are the folks that run the world and have the absolute power are white. And so it is a supremacy in the sense that they direct everything. And I would dare say under the illusion of white supremacy. I think that's a good argument that we could make.
I'm not in denial about systemic and structural, political, social, and historical kind of, you know, constructs and just the facts of that. I'm not saying that that doesn't exist, and the effects, people don't feel them, mm-hmm. you know, that and experience them. That's not what I'm saying. I'm okay. just saying even beyond that, in a greater sense.
So my original question stands. So how did you figure out which pieces to draw from? In your everyday practical life, we all have these experiences of microaggressions and overt racism. How did you pick the stories or the monologues to do? Like, and was it painful? And did you dredge up things that you had forgotten about? Or like, oh no, I don't want to go there. I don't want to do that. Talk a little bit about I'm trying to get you to talk about your experience of deciding what to take on as a monologue.
Well, I mean, I know for me, that word Sankofa and that vibration of Sankofa, meaning the way out is back through, is very real for me. It's something that I live by. And I think sometimes, you know, we find ourselves in places where we don't quite understand the temperature or why the temperature is what it is. And sometimes you got to go back through in order to figure out how to go forward and to get past that thing that's there. And going back for me, it was painful. It was surreal. Like, oh man, this really is something that happened to my great grandfather. This is really something that is happening in 2020. This is really something that just happened. What was it, a week ago when the Capitol building was stormed and we saw, you know, it for itself as it is. So because I saw that history has repeated itself, it felt good for me to pick the monologue that I picked. And I also picked it because there's a cry to our people, to people of color, asking, when are we going to stand up? A lot like Terrence was saying, white supremacy, I see what you mean, T. Mm-hmm. It is an illusion. It's very real. Babs, it is very real.
I agree. It is very, very real, but I understand what Terrence is talking about. It is. Because as long as we keep saying it the way that we say it, it gives it the power to continue to.
Right. So I picked my monologue because at the end of it, the character asks, when are we gonna stand up for ourselves? Cause ain't nobody else gonna do it for us. You know. So just making us accountable and making us say, yo, we're people too. We're strong too. We have empires. We, you know, first kings, you know, the first human being was found 5,000 years before any other bones were. And it was in East Africa. You know what I mean? So when are we going to overlook, you know, and step over this white supremacist type of climate that we're in now, you know, and that's just kind of helped me so, pick mine.
So Gracie and Tamika, you want to talk a little bit about
your sisters, please. Yes. Say something, sisters.
I'll say this. So in trying to figure out what it is that I wanted to write about and the things that came to me, the question that Jenny left me with was, what's on your heart? That's what she said. What's on your heart? And try and figure out from there, whatever comes up. And as soon as she said that, the first thing that popped into my mind was Sandra Bland. Not exactly sure at that point why that popped into my head. And then that popped into my head, Children in Cages popped into my head. Being a Latinx, you know, being from Venezuela and coming here some 40 odd years ago and feeling this sense of privilege that my grandmother was able to, you know, get us all visas, you know, me and all my brothers and sisters and my mother, my father to all be able to move here. That if we were living in the time now, how we very easily could have been in cages while they were sending my parents back, and just what that meant. And also just my own blackness, what that means and things that I've struggled with as far as feeling like, I think because I have this Latin side to me too, feeling like I wasn't black enough, you know, finding lots of situations where I found myself feeling like I just wasn't black enough. And centering in those three topics are the ones that really just bubbled up for me and trying to figure out, you know, which one of the ones are the ones that I wanted to go there for. And the Children in Cages was just, I just didn't think that I could even make it through a monologue because it's just too much. Just the thought of that is just too much. And I ended up really focusing in on Sandra Bland and what her death meant to me and how that really shook that my world up.
That could be any one of us as Black women. Like that's,
it shook that
could be,
me
that up. Could be any one of us on any given day, on any given street, in any given town in this country.
Literally. And it was difficult trying to just suss out the moment that I realized my connection, my very real connection to Sandra Bland. It took me a moment, I should say, before I could just write it without really getting lost in the memory and the feelings that I had at that moment. I will say that I have not driven down Jewel Street in New Haven in years. I just won't go down that street. I'll go all the way around it if I need to, it doesn't matter. I will not go down that street. Mm-hmm.
And that is because?
Because you need to hear my monologue to find out why I don't want to go down that street. I don't want to put too much out there.
I'm gonna be right there. All right, Miss.
But yeah.
Yeah, Tamika, yeah.
Yeah, so I'll say what kind of had me gravitating towards my monologue was my babies. Like as a mom, my son he just turned 17, my daughter's 7. And believe it or not, they had a lot of experiences dealing with just racism, biases against them.
No, I believe it. There's no not believing it. I believe it.
Right. It's 7. You know, she doesn't even realize it. And so and my son, just, you know, whether it's how my son is very articulate. I mean, my son responds like an adult man. It's impressive. And so, you know, he's gotten comments like, oh, you're so well spoken. You know, and it's like, well, he's 17. English is his only language.
Why wouldn't?
Hmm? You know what I mean? Yeah.
We've all gotten that.
Exactly. So I had to literally just narrow down some of the things that he shared with me, some of the things that my daughter has already experienced, to kind of condense it into a piece and try to touch on a couple things, but not have it all over the place. Mm-hmm. And I will say, you know, it was hard in a sense where it's like it brought back those same mama bear, you know, I want to take somebody out feelings, mm-hmm. as I'm going through, like the nerve, you know what I mean? But yeah. One of the things, especially with my son, because he's had a lot of experience where he didn't know how to respond, you know, and so just really just kind of empowering him, speak up, stand up for yourself. You know, if someone says something, you know, you don't have to be passive and just come tell me. You can tell that person. And he's had opportunities where he's done so. He had to, and he's done so. And, you know, whether it's losing, he's lost a couple friends along the way. But he's okay with that. Because, you know, I'm just like, you don't have to stand for those things. And so you know, just kind of helped shift me into just having more dialogue with my children, my daughter about her hair, you know, and just her image as a Black girl. That's a big deal. And so that, and then I will say also, you know, kind of ties into what Tanisi said, it felt like therapeutic, you know, the things that were on my heart, just write it down. You know, even another thing with just how Black women are presented. And I know, Babs, we talked about that, you know, we don't get the happy ending, you wanted a love story, you know, and just vulnerability for us. You know, you don't see that, you know, we're always a hardcore mom who has to suck it up and just go through it. And, you know, you have this, you know, you may,
yes, work. Our love is always in struggle. Like it's always struggle love.
Right. And then you're supposed to feel so, oh, you are such a strong single mom. And for me to think that that's a badge of honor. Like, I understand, yes, I am strong, but that's not how the structure should be. Or
I think, you know, something happened with your mic, Tamika.
So it's those things that just kind of made me, other things like that just kind of popped in my mind, and just like, Tanika, just write these things. I want to write about things that you don't really, I want to write us in a way where we're not normally represented.
Something happened with your audio, Tamika.
Oh, I don't know.
It sounded like it just cut out, so.
If you get a call, sometimes when you get a call.
Okay.
Yep, what happened. Okay.
So can you all tell me a little bit about what you hope people will walk away from this theater with? And do you feel some obligation to sort of tie it up neatly in the end, or it's going to be what it is, you know? How do you want people to walk away from this performance feeling, thinking, understanding? And do you feel compelled to have a happily ever after?
This is an evolutionary process. You know, I was just considering white supremacy, racism. Throughout the history of man, we have had, and woman, humanity, we have had to struggle through environmental conditions. And they are different types of environmental impediments or obstructions, the weather, you know, the right foods, you know, this and that over a period of time. And now this is a social and kind of, it's a spiritual malady. You know, it's a lack of consciousness. You know, this idea of white supremacy and racism. You know, before racism, there was tribalism. And racism is just a subset of tribalism. You know, so we were always, so I'm just saying that what I do and how I move with my consciousness and my activism in maybe subtle ways, maybe to some folks, insufficient ways of reacting to this social condition, it's going to take time. And people's reaction, the results are not up to me. And I just have to understand, as I'm sure even more majestic and extraordinary activist. And I'm not saying I'm not even in that. I wouldn't even say that. People would say, you ain't no damn, I would never call myself that. I'm not into identity in general. I don't call myself a lot of things other than I am an organism. That's like the only thing that I can claim, really, is I'm an organism. You know, I am an intentional expression of a wondrous universe. I belong here and I belong well. So therefore my responsibility is to stay well. And my wellness depends ultimately on the wellness of my community. You know, so I'm just saying that whatever folks take from this, I just have to have believe and some faith that because my intention is, you know, what it is, that it will support the process, the evolutionary process of, you know, getting that idea, diffusing that idea of white supremacy, and then racism will just, you know, just kind of disappear. You know what I'm saying?
You know? Okay. So, anybody else? What do you want people to walk away with from your monologue?
I will say that I hope that when the whole event is done, that the white people that are watching, that they do buy that Me and White Supremacy book and do that 28-day challenge. You know, I don't need to read the book because I could have wrote it. It's not for us. You know what I mean? It's not my book, it's your book, and I just want people to do the homework. I was watching the interview that they had with Leila Saad, and she had said how, you know, we study African-American history, Asian history, and that we might need to really study white history and what does that mean? And that really just struck me as, because I mean, you can say that we're studying white history on a daily basis, that's really what we're studying in the history books and what have you, but actually, what does it mean to be white and how your whiteness functions in society? So I really want white people to go buy that book and do that homework.
Yes.
Take it to heart, the things, the very personal stories that are being told, that, you know, Ta-Nehisi went back 10 years and it's still the same. You know, you can just keep going further back and the story is still the same. We're still struggling the same way, feeling like, you know, we're not being listened to, we're not being heard. So I want you to hear me. That's what I want. I want you to hear me. I want you to see me. And I want you to take action. I want there to be more than just lip service or you blacking out your screen all black for Instagram, more of, for lack of a better word, because I don't really like using the word being an ally, I will say use more humanity, because that's what's missing.
Okay. So anybody else before we wrap up? Because I've got about 2 seconds.
No. I agree with Gracie. I think humanity. I think, first of all, Terrence, Tamika, and Gracie are heavy. And
they are.
I want the heaviness of this to ground people, not necessarily bring them to tears, not necessarily, you know, oh, round of applause because it was a great performance, but have that
feel it.
Feel like a weight, you know, like a weighted vest. You know, you put the weighted vest on and you start working out and you realize you can't. It's hard. It's something holding you back. But the more you work out with this vest and the more you take in this content that we're going to drop, the stronger you're going to get, the more fortified you're going to become. And hopefully they take the weight of this and say, I'm willing to put this privilege to the side and treat everyone with the on the same accord, with the same respect, the same humanity, the same love, and the same dignity.
Thank you very much. Well, for those that are interested in seeing this, it will be Thursday, I think 7 o'clock. You can go to westportplayhouse.org. They have a full calendar, a full page of events around all of this. They kicked it off with Layla's conversation and interview. And then you can, there's some stuff going on today at 7 o'clock. What can I do next? And then in February, I believe they are going to start her 28-day challenge. So they're going to have people work, you know, calling people to do this work. But Thursday, they're going to close with this inspirational evening of monologues from four prolific Black theater artists responding to the responding to the work of Dr. King and to Layla and her book. And I'm so glad that I was able to get you all on this morning. I'm looking forward to this. I think this is going to be wonderful. It's going to be enriching. And I can't wait to see you all do your thing. So thank you all for joining me this morning.
Happy New
Year. Thank you, Babs. Thank you. Thank you, guys. We'll see
you guys. Thank you, Jenny Nelson, wherever you are.
Yes, Jenny. Thank you, Jenny.
The Westport Country Playhouse folks, thank you too for their coordination of this. Thank you. So y'all take good care, and I will I'll be in the audience on Thursday.
All right.
See y'all Thursday.
Yes. Thank you. All right, Harry. Up next is Visa doing her global thing. So stay tuned. It's Tuesday. Every Tuesday, she's on at 11. And Paul Bass at 12 o'clock. So if y'all are missing Paul Bass, he's back on. I'll see y'all tomorrow, Inauguration Day. Thanks, Harry.
Hi, this is Babs Doyle-Bybee from New Haven, Connecticut, and you're listening to WNHHLP 103.5 FM, streaming live at newhavenindependent.org.